Okay, this is John Williams. Here we go with the Mincing Rascals, recapping the strangest week, days, even few hours any of us have ever seen. Before we get to that, how's your knee doing? Yep, this is a commercial for the Joint Relief Institute, because no matter what's going on in the world, if you've got a sore knee, your life is just that much more uncomfortable. It's just hard to get around. And spring weather is coming. It's going to be nice enough to take a walk or a stroll. That might be all we're going to be able to do. So let's take care of that knee pain. The Joint Relief Institute uses digital imaging. They see where your tissue is worn away, and then they put a lubricant into that exact spot. It works. It's a fast, pain-free, non-surgical procedure that most insurance policies pay for, Medicare patients too. And the nice thing about the Joint Relief Institute, they've got an insurance specialist to make sure they get you through the paperwork. They've got two locations. It's the same phone number for either spot, so I'd call them now. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. You can visit them at the jointreliefinstitute.com's website, jointreliefinstitute.com. Today is Thursday. It's March 12th, 2020, and it's 1:47 in the afternoon. This is John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals, the weekly podcast we record at the studios of WGN in Chicago. Email the Rascals, John Williams, at WGNradio.com.
I'm Steve Bertrand from the WGN Radio Newsroom, out of sync because we're a couple of hours late.
Yeah, we are.
I'm Austin Berg, Vice President of Marketing at the Illinois Policy Institute.
I'm Eric Zorn, the concerned and confounded columnist from the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, we are talking to you today from the 18th story of a tall, busy building downtown Chicago. We brush shoulders all day long with thousands a couple of blocks over from the Prudential Towers, where Eric Zorn works, Pru 1 and Pru 2. And in Pru 1, Eric, right, where the Chicago Tribune houses itself, someone has tested positive for coronavirus, right?
I'm not sure whether it was Pru 1 or Pru 2. I thought it was...
Well, do you know which one you're in?
It was the one that we're in, yeah.
Okay. Which is, I believe, one. Did they close Phil down? Vitale said it was one.
They closed down. Well, it's Phil Vitale said it. It must be true. They closed down that office there, and they've urged us to work at home if possible, which doesn't really put me out much because I do that a lot anyway. I don't think I've ever seen a news story move as fast as this one did yesterday.
Well, there was a Joe Biden South Carolina win. But other than that,
well, I mean, the thing is, like, you know, of course, obviously, it's not the biggest story in the world. I mean, 9/11 was bigger than this, but the way this story is kind of moving along, and then suddenly, you know, in the course of about 4 hours yesterday,
right. What was the kick in the teeth for you last night?
Well, it was the closing of the NBA, which I thought was really striking,
stunning.
And then
stunning.
Tom Hanks, yeah. And Rita Wilson announcing their thing, and just, you know, the pace of closings. I mean, in the beginning of the week, it seemed kind of like, well, things are starting to close down, and maybe. You know, we had a couple of conventions, and now it looks like I think we're headed toward like almost an Italian style shutdown of the U.S.
No St. Patrick's Day parade. Pritzker said had emergency declaration yesterday, and Trump speech yesterday, and the biggest one, markets went nuts.
Well, and again, literally, the Big East Conference tournament was underway today as other conferences were canceling, and it was St. John's and Creighton, and they let them play until halftime. Every other conference had canceled. They let them play until halftime. They went in the locker room and said, okay, we're done. We're not coming back out, which is kind of funny to me that, you know, if the risk was so imminent, why they didn't just shut it down right away.
It's funny, isn't it, how the market drops 1,000 points, and that's baked into every morning now. When I get up, I go, the market's going to drop 1,500 points, 2,000 points. I mean, unprecedented numbers, and yet you just go, yeah, that's the way it is, and it's the way it's going to be for a while.
Yeah, and I would urge people not to... In the same way people were saying, yeah, it's not going to be a big deal, go about your normal day, and then in a second it was, oh no, close everything, cancel everything. The same people are coming out saying, oh, great time to buy stocks, you know, right, they're stock pickers, they're their own Jim Cramers. Like, nobody knows what's going to happen with the market. Fed just announced basically just huge quantitative easing today.
Which knocked, I think, 800 points off the loss, and then they ate it back up again.
Yeah, so no one knows what's going to happen in the market. Extremely volatile.
But you do know what's going to happen eventually. You do know that we're going to get through this. Medically, scientifically, the thing will run its course. We're not going to... This is a really transient moment we're in right now.
It is and it isn't. You're right. That ultimately, medically, we're going to come back from this. The question, when you cancel like the NBA season, obviously the highly paid players may not get their full paychecks, but then you've got all these people who work in and around the NBA, the vendors, the parking lot owners, the security guards, the ticket takers. All these people are suddenly out of work. This is their gig. This is how they pay their rent. This is how they make their car payments. This is what they use when they go shopping, when they're buying clothes, and when they're buying going to restaurants and so on. If they can't do that, if they suddenly they have to go on to some sort of government assistance, I mean, the ripple effects of these things are huge, and you're seeing it over and over and over again. And those things, you can't just snap your fingers and come back from that. You can get a vaccine in a year to take care of COVID-19, but you're not going to bring all these people back.
So are we overreacting?
No, I don't think we are.
Why do you say that? Really, just pause and think about that. Maybe we are. These are self-inflicted wounds, economically.
I plead ignorance. I absolutely plead ignorance, and to quote the president, but I have a hunch. And I do feel like maybe we're, you know, it's like I was saying to you earlier, John, we're fighting like a clear balloon or ball or bubble. You know, we can't even really see it, but we're scared to death of it. We've seen bits and glimpses of it. We don't really know yet what it's going to be. And, you know, there aren't that many people sickened yet. I can't believe I'm saying these things. Hang on a second there, Bertrand.
We haven't tested people. That's how
well,
we don't
I understand
know
that. I understand
okay, but
that.
What if we told you that we're going to test or that this thing's going to run its course and 38 million people are going to get sick and 35,000 people are going to die? You would say, well, then, my God, it's a good thing we canceled everything and the markets reacted reasonably. That's happening and will happen every year anyway.
That's the flu season.
That's the flu. And so I just think we've already factored in our tolerance for communal living and the prices we pay for it, but this thing's numbers are so small.
We don't
know how bad it's going to be.
What was the projection yesterday? It was 170 million. And if you've got a death rate, which is, I think, 10 times what the flu's death rate is, I know that the numbers are still small.
Again, because we don't know we don't have the testing, we don't know.
If you look at a place like Italy right now, Italy is just, you know.
We can see what's going to happen if it gets worse, and it looks like Italy, and it's getting really bad.
How bad? What are the numbers in Italy, do you know?
So I think there's, 5,000 cases and a few hundred deaths?
800 deaths.
The problem is the rate at which they're rising and what you're seeing on the ground in hospitals, which is essentially they've been overwhelmed. That's the problem when you talk about, like, are we overreacting? It might seem like an overreaction now, given the low number of cases, to do social distancing or to cancel all of these events. But it matters a lot when you're dealing with something that grows exponentially to lower the bell curve. So instead of having everybody get sick at once because we're all just doing our thing and we're all downtown and we're shaking hands and slapping five and licking each other's faces, that causes severe... Yeah, maybe that's just my workplace. But
I did say I was going to give you a kiss today, Eric.
Yeah, but that spike can completely overwhelm the healthcare system, whereas if you can spread that out and lower it by canceling, suspending the NBA season, stopping the Big Ten tournament, that is a good result.
And also, it's true that I could never be proven right because the steps we're taking may well mitigate.
Yeah, we know math. We know how disease transmits. So if you say, you know, Italy did these measures and it would have, you know, the spread was higher in this country where they didn't do these measures versus Italy where they didn't. That's where you see sort of the difference there. And what I think is going to be really interesting in the U.S. is the state-level responses. There's a great New York Times story about this woman who's doing all this research in Puget Sound on the flu and swabbed all of these folks. And then when corona came, she said, oh, I've got all these you know, flu samples. I can test those people for corona. And she couldn't get approval for days. And those days really matter right. A lot. So different state responses, I think, are really going to matter in terms of how this spreads.
Are the states making the calls yet, or are they still having to go through the CDC?
I think to some extent now they are making the calls, especially New York is like ordering their own tests and things like that. There's a lot of leeway when you're a state that is flexible and kind of has the resources to do it.
I guess they have to send the samples. They have been sending them to the CDC, literally. You take a swab here, and then it goes to the CDC, and then it comes back. And there's literally a problem with them having sufficient supplies to create the test kits, send them out, let alone have them. But it's been very frustrating to hear how ill-prepared we were with the testing.
It was all very frustrating to hear the president speak last night, and off the teleprompter, which he doesn't do very often, doesn't do very well, but at least you think that he would have chosen his words correctly. And he gets on and he says that, first of all, he says that cargo is being stopped from England, or from Europe, I guess. No more cargo from Europe.
These prohibitions will not only apply to the tremendous amount of trade and cargo, but various other things as we get approval.
which freaked everybody right out because that, you know, we have all kinds of supply chains and everything are connected to Europe. And then right after the speech, they kind of like walk it back. Like, no, he didn't mean to say that. Like, how do you do that? How do you have a speech on the teleprompter that has a loaded, so to speak, word like cargo in it? And, you know, and then he says that the insurance companies in America have agreed to pay for testing and treatment of people with coronavirus. And that's not true either. They're going to pay for testing, but not treatment.
I met with the leaders of health insurance industry who have agreed to waive all co-payments for coronavirus treatments, extend insurance coverage.
I don't know. How do you make mistakes like that? How is your leadership so weak? How is your staffing so poor? And how can you possibly inspire confidence in people when you're that bad at
right.
what you're it's, doing?
You know, and we're not... less than ever, we are at a time where piling on to the president is a good idea, right? And so I've been trying to resist that. And I think you bring up very legitimate...
Allow me.
No, but I think you bring up very legitimate points about that. There are other things that, you know, say, you know, he looked like he had it last night, blah, blah, blah. I just don't think that's not what we should be doing or how we should be talking today. Having said that, he made a move like he made last night without informing his European allies. You know, that we were cutting them off from flying here. And he said today, he says, well, those calls take time.
We had to make a decision and I didn't want to take time. And, you know, it takes a long time to make the individual calls. And we are calling and we have spoken to some of them prior to. But we had to move quickly. I mean, when they raise taxes on us, they don't consult us. And I think that's probably one and the same.
And we're making the calls now.
To be honest with you, I was a little disappointed, Eric, in the messaging in that how many questions it left unanswered. Why wasn't England included? Does this mean if I was an American, I go to Europe? Can I come back? It sounds like I can, but that would seem to be the perfect way to transmit the illness. So there was just, didn't you guys come away with as many questions, new questions unanswered as were answered?
I think there's a lot of unanswered questions. And yeah, yesterday was so weird. So on the same day as the president's speech, Joe Rogan, who is just the biggest host in the history of the world, I mean, had a guest on who is an infectious disease expert. It's like a 2-hour episode. And he's asking him the basic question, you know, do saunas kill the virus? You know, just like a dumb average guy questions, right? Do saunas kill the virus? No. And then lets him go on. Okay, so why do we need to stop this now versus later? Okay, go. And that's what you kind of want from a if we're just talking about the theatrics of a speech, I think you don't want to leave so many questions unanswered. You want to dumb it way down. Meet people where they're at and be really practical. Yeah. He did do some of that. He said, you know, hygiene.
Wash your hands, clean often used surfaces, cover your face and mouth if you sneeze or cough.
I do think the 30-day ban from people coming back from Europe is a good thing, and I think most experts that I've seen comment on it say it's a good thing.
But it's not on people coming back from Europe. It's people coming in from Europe. Because if you're over in Europe...
Sorry, from, I meant. Yeah.
Okay, because if you're in Europe now, if you're a tourist in Europe, if you're, say, with a
Steve Bertrand travel.
Steve Bertrand
I've
travel.
Got a trip, I've got a trip hung in the air right now.
Yeah, then you can come back. So, but if you are an Italian national and you want to come over here for business, you can't do that. You know, that does make some sense. And of course,
wait a minute, how does that make sense? If you're a human being in Italy, then maybe you shouldn't be coming to the United. I don't care.
I'm
what
saying that does make sense.
Does it or does not?
It does. I think it does make sense.
I don't think it makes sense at all.
To stay if you're in Italy and you're coming over here.
But if you're an American, why would you not be banned?
If you're a human being, you shouldn't be coming here from Italy. I don't care what your nation of origin is.
No, you're right about that. You're absolutely right about that. Except that I think the politics of that. He basically said an absolute ban or a total ban on travel.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, there've got to be people. And he said it takes effect Friday, I think.
And then except for the UK.
Except for the UK, where he has golf courses.
And Ireland.
Ireland, yeah.
That cannot be the reason that the UK and Ireland are not. Well, but everybody's speculating. Yeah. I mean, that's a coincidence not lost on a lot of people.
It is. I mean, I think the reason is because the EU has this completely open borders in that zone.
I think that was a practical move.
And one of the reasons UK basically has been, it's got the border, it's got very strong borders. And they're doing a very good job. They don't have very much infection at this point, and hopefully they'll keep it that way.
Imagine all the American tourists who might be over there who are going to fly back on Sunday, all of a sudden going, holy crap, we're going to be stuck here for another month if we don't, and you know, calling their travel agents, calling the airlines, and then, you know, a little bit later the prisoner goes, you know, they clarify and say, oh, no, no, you can come back if you're American. But he didn't say that. He had all the time he wanted. Why doesn't he give better information, more information? I don't know.
Who should be the spokesperson? The president should be our leader and should speak. But maybe not as much. I don't know, Alex Azar or the vice president
Pence
or somebody.
Been doing a pretty good job.
I know that, but you see, I'm speaking specifically about Donald Trump now. Maybe as difficult as it is for him, he loves to be the guy. Maybe he should be the guy less right now because he does not inspire confidence.
And I think his advisors probably say, hey, look at the markets, get your face out on TV and tell everybody everything's fine is what I imagine is happening. I think we should get that woman from Chicago, the
Isn't
doctor.
She great?
She's, yeah. She rules.
Arwady?
Arwady, yeah.
She is dynamite. She, the blonde-haired doctor,
yeah.
In charge of the Chicago Public Department of Health.
And my team at the Chicago Department of Public Health is working in close coordination with the CDC, the Illinois Department of Public Health, the Cook County Department of Public Health.
For a while, I was trying to make the hashtag Baghdad Don happen on Twitter, because I just felt like Trump was just out there denying what was going on. You know, it's going to go away in a few days, and like America, it'll be gone.
It's going to disappear. One day, it's like a miracle. It will disappear.
Everyone's just keep calm. It'll be fine.
Well, that's why he shouldn't be in front of a microphone. But when he was saying it'll be like a miracle, it'll just go away. It'll get warmer. In April, it'll be gone. Eric, I wonder if he wasn't the victim of the same ignorance the rest of us had. Unfortunately, he was the one that we were asking the questions to. A lot of people would have said the things Donald Trump was saying when he was speaking incorrectly.
Because it's certainly our experience with the flu. So there's a flu season, and then it warms up. And same with the colds.
Okay.
Have that season. But of course, what happens with the Spanish flu, for instance... I think I was alive then. I don't know if you guys were.
But no, the 1919
one? Yeah, 1919. The Spanish flu, it went away. It did wane in the summer. Then it came back with a vengeance in the fall. I think it came back more deadly, in fact, in the fall.
But it's also true that 60,000 people have had this virus, and they've gotten better.
Well, one of the things that I think is scary about this virus is that many, many people who get it don't show are asymptomatic, and it also it takes between, I think the average is 5 days from the time you're exposed to it till the time that you until the time you manifest symptoms. So you may be walking around, you may have it. Any one of us at this table might have had it for a couple of days. Everything we touch, every handrail we touch, every gas pump, every ATM, every shopping cart handle, we're leaving that virus there, but we don't even know it. And it can live on those surfaces for like 3 days, some of the surfaces for 3 days. That's what makes this so scary. And the fact is that all of us around the table here are probably robust enough to survive. We're probably not going to die from it. But my parents, my folks are 88, and if they get it, that's going to be really hard.
So,
really bad.
And again, I'm arguing against myself because I don't want to be this guy. I really don't want to be this guy. But, you know, there have been times a few weeks ago, it's like, oh, everybody's sick. Flu's going around. Everybody gets it. This person's sick. This person's sick. Well, if that's true and it's incubating, I don't know many sick people right now. And I know that makes me sound really stupid. But, you know, if we are leaving it on everything we touch and it can make everyone sick, do we know that more people in our lives are ill now than were at the height of the flu season six,
I would not have
weeks
known
ago?
That.
I think that because we are on the we're just ramping up into this right now. We you know the testing is showing us how many cases there are.
But the testing doesn't tell us that my son's home from school sick.
Right.
You know, and
we should be seeing it, and we don't.
I don't see people who are sick.
Right, but I think we're ramping up. But I mean, if you go to a place like Italy, and I think we're just a couple weeks behind places like Italy, mm-hmm. and South Korea and Wuhan.
Well, then why aren't you angrier?
So it's coming.
I think it's coming. I mean, you know, I could be wrong. I mean, we'll find out which one, if Steve's right or I'm right pretty soon, I think.
I'm surprised you're not angrier then at the person that came from China to your building, knowing full well that they could be a vector at that time, asymptomatic. I don't know what that person is supposed to do, but doggone it, they shouldn't have been in that building.
Well, yeah, and I think that it's possible that they didn't. No,
I'm sure they didn't. But I mean,
asymptomatic, they're thinking, "Well, I'm fine. I came back.
Okay,
I'm fine."
I'm going to restate my question. Even though they didn't know, maybe they should have been sufficiently cautious for somebody in this giant building complex you work in.
Right.
If I was just coming back from China, maybe I would work from home for a few days. Maybe my employer would tell me to stay home for a few days.
But the thing is, you could have worked. Maybe he. Is it a guy? I don't even know.
I don't either.
This human being might did stay home for a week and said, "Yeah, I feel fine," and then came in, and again, it takes 5 to 12 days to show symptoms on this stuff.
I'm mad at that person, Eric. And I'm mad at that person
assuming,
for you.
You're assuming that person had the liberty to do that or the wherewithal to do that, too.
Yeah, I am. And if they didn't, then their employer should have empowered them. Anybody got somebody flying in from China in the last few weeks should be a red flag, regardless of how well you feel.
People are framing this as, do I get the virus or not, versus can I transmit the virus to somebody else? Right. I think that's
look
the shift that really
needs to
happen.
Look at Fred Hoiberg on the bench of the Nebraska basketball game. Did you guys see the video of Fred Hoiberg, the former Bulls coach?
No.
So he's the coach of Nebraska. He's playing in the Big Ten tournament. He had to leave the game towards the end, but the game was still going on. He walked into the locker room. He was that sick. He could barely sit up on the bench of the game. He's a wreck. He's a physical wreck. I'm like, Fred, I know you're tough and you guys really want to win the game, but what the hell? It just took one guy in the NBA to shut down the NBA.
But again, one was the flu and one was the coronavirus, right?
Well,
and so,
he did, but
and
he
so
didn't
our
know.
Reactions are different.
So then he goes in and they test him and he has influenza type A. He's whatever it is. He's got the flu.
So the game on.
So he doesn't.
We'll play again tomorrow.
He doesn't have coronavirus. But by the way, he's still spreading the flu.
But I think you, Eric, I love your point about this, Austin, because I'm not worried at all about getting sick. I'm not worried a lick. But I do feel conscious about, you know, trying to make sure I'm not getting other people sick.
I feel the same way, actually. I feel strongly about that, too. And there's some events that I'm not going to go to coming up because I feel like if I'm carrying something around, I don't want to. And these are like close quarters kind of things. I don't, it's like, why would I do that? I don't have to do that.
So
I'm worried about visiting my parents in a few weeks, too.
So are you altering any of your plans over the next 10 days?
I'm not going to any raves anymore. No, I'm...
So his schedule is wide open.
Exactly. So I have a trip out to New Hampshire for a meeting in 2 weeks that I'm considering canceling, but it's just because. But it's only with 12 other people. It's not a large meeting, but just going in and out through the airport. If you're practicing okay hygiene and you're not in a place with close quarters with a lot of people, you should be probably okay.
The airport doesn't scare you?
No, not that much.
I'm defensive about this. Again, because I have a travel company, but there's a document put out by the World Health Organization about how safe the air is in airplanes.
I saw that, yeah.
Surgically safe, which shocked me. I didn't expect that. I thought I was going to have to hide that from my passengers.
It's the surfaces, right?
Instead, I shared it with them. Yeah.
You should be concerned with the surfaces, so you should take some Clorox wipes or whatever.
I mean, my wife and son are going separately to L.A. next weekend. And it doesn't even occur to me that maybe they shouldn't go. They're going for spring break, and my wife's going to visit my daughter. Neither trip is necessary.
Okay, but fair enough. I'm not that nervous about going through O'Hare, and the trip Brenda and I have planned next week, which we probably aren't going to take, would take us to an Airbnb with a couple of other friends, and we wouldn't have to interact with people that much. And the airplane is literally making some of us nervous. I just saw Lou Manfredini just sent me a text, Steve. Broadway is shut down for 30 days now.
Yeah, how about
the shows are canceled.
Oh, my goodness.
Really. So it just tells you how proactive or reactive people are being about this right now.
Where do you think it's going to go? I mean, when you shut down Broadway, it seems to me the obvious next step is going to be shut down the shows in Chicago. I mean, it seems like Chicago is like a day
or
two behind.
Well, see, and that's what happens. As soon as one does it, then there's this sort of, well, this, I don't know if it's a guilt trip or this sort of inflamed responsibility that you have to do it too.
You don't want to be the last one since everybody else did it. If things go south, they go, well, what the hell were you thinking? But I think this lends some credence to the, you did it, so I'll do it, so I'll do it, so I'll do it. Do we all need to be doing it?
Right.
I thought the baseball canceling was sort of interesting because baseball is all outside. I can understand some of these sports where everyone's like scrunched together.
Yeah, inside. MLS too is suspended. Yeah.
But right, all these outdoor sports, it's not clear to me, maybe because the players have
Has baseball made it official yet? Or
spring training.
Spring training.
IHSA is playing their state boys basketball tournament.
With like 60 fans?
60 fans per team.
But all these things seem partway measures. Because remember, the Big Ten tournament said, we're going to have the games, but with no fans. And then 10 minutes or 20 minutes before the game this morning.
I mean, think about a men's bathroom at a game with 20,000 people, though, even if it's outside, right?
Why would you make us do that?
But that is a good thought. Yeah, like it's... And this, I think I've been saying this for a couple of weeks, but it's just so much better to overreact in cases like this and underreact when it comes to the distancing.
So when do we stop to overreact?
When we start to see the curve bend down, I think is when you stop. Right now, it's growing exponentially still. So clearly there's more to be done.
And it is easier, but again, I go back to, you know, it's easy to shut down Broadway. The stars are going to be fine. The theater owners are going to be fine. But what about, you know, the extras? What about the ticket takers? What about all the people out, you know, the people who sell
Lori Lightfoot talked about that this morning on MSNBC. She goes, you know, we're losing these shows at McCormick Place. There's insurance and things like that. But there are hundreds of people being laid off because of it. And so when does this become September 11th proportions, you know, as far as economic fallout? Because I talking to you guys because you're all so much smarter than me.
How long would you say the September 11th economic fallout lasted? There was a period where we couldn't fly, and that really hurt the airlines and hurt the travel industry and it hurt other things. But ultimately, I think over time that turned out to be kind of a blip, right?
We recovered. Yeah, 2008 was maybe more consequential than 9/11.
Much more so, I think, right. Financially.
So if you're saying, what will this mirror more financially?
The housing bubble. So yeah, that's the question here. You obviously can't predict what the market's going to do. There's one school of thought that says, hey, the underlying bones of the economy right now are actually so strong that this is going to be a blip. And after the summer's over, it could come roaring right back. And this is what I was saying earlier, where people are like, man, Apple's really underpriced right now. American Airlines really underpriced right now. All these amazing companies you can get for dirt cheap.
You don't know that, though.
No, you don't. Nobody knows that. And to try to play the market that way or pretend like you can, I think, is a folly. So the other school of thought is that coronavirus isn't necessarily the cause of a recession. But it exposes, similar to if you just crush a water bottle, you never know if there were cracks in it. But if you blow air into it, you start to see, you know, the problems, the cracks in the bottle, right? If it exposes other parts of the economy that are due for a correction, then it can turn into a recession. So it's just a moment in time that can trigger something like that.
I think it was the United CEO talked earlier this week about how revenue was going to be down for the next couple of months, like 70% or something like that. And then he talked about how quickly it would recover. And he projected that it would recover less quickly than after September 11th, so that we would be more willing to get on an airplane after September 11th, after they were used as weapons, than during the virus. Yeah.
Interesting. But of course, all these trips that are being canceled are not going to be doubled up on later. Or if you miss a restaurant meal now, you're not going to go eat two restaurant meals later. If you don't buy a washing machine today, you'll probably buy it in 6 months. But these things don't just come back like that, right?
I mean, if you travel once a year, you've missed a year.
Right, exactly. Or yeah, if your kids have breaks or something.
They've talked about like postponing the St. Patrick's Day parade, which is going to be kind of odd. Like, okay, it's July 15th.
Patty's in July.
Yeah, we're going to have it. But in that case, you know, the vendors, because I'm sure there are a lot of people who are out a lot of money. Who you know, maybe all the restaurants that ordered all the corned beef and the green beer and all that stuff like that. I mean, I feel really bad for those people. I really do. But I think that the consequence of just saying, oh, what the hell, let's all keep gathering together and have these large events and what the hell, those consequences could be far worse.
Just to go back to this now, Chicago-based airline preparing for dire decline in revenue of 70% in April and May and 60% in June.
I looked up a flight to Miami for April 11th, so what, a few weeks from now? $37 a flight was going from O'Hare.
And what would have that normally been?
I mean, 200s or three? I mean, no, it's crazy.
I had to laugh when I saw the video finally today, just before we walked in here, of Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz, who on Monday at a press conference before Wednesday, when he was found to have tested positive, at the end of a press conference went up and touched all of the microphones playfully to sort of diminish the over concern he thought we all had of coronavirus. He literally, at the end of the press conference, he said, you know, I'm okay. This is all over, we're done. And then he touches everybody's microphone as he's exiting it. And he is the guy in the NBA that had it, who gave it to a teammate, and who knows who he could have infected with that sort of ignorant playfulness. I know he didn't think he had it at the time. 2 days later, literally as the teams are lining up for the jump ball, somebody runs onto the court and says, stop. One of the players has tested positive. He was not on the floor at the time. He has already been kept at the hotel because he was feeling that ill. But it doesn't matter. By now, you've infected potentially everybody, and one of his teammates was.
That prank didn't age well. Was it Gates, the congressman, who wore a gas mask?
Yeah, I think it was Gates.
He wore a gas mask into Congress, and then
for what purpose?
He was mocking concerns.
How long ago was that?
Oh, it was just a week or so ago, and then one of his constituents died of the coronavirus, so he quietly took off the gas mask.
Right? There's a big problem with the machismo of like the Chicagoans who are out in the blizzard. It's that same mentality of like, hey, this is Chicago. You know, I'm going out. Just dress properly. No bad weather.
That was me last week, Austin.
Of course. Well, yeah, we all do it. Don't do it with this. Like, this is not the time to do that. It's not a blizzard. It's going to be a months long affair, and the decisions you make can have a butterfly effect, as Eric was discussing on a lot of other
people. More to your point, Austin, I think it's something kind of typical of men not to want. I mean, so I'll go into work. How many times have you had people come to this office? We certainly have them at our place who show up sick, and they're thinking like, I am demonstrating to my bosses that I am in it. I am here. This is my priority. And the bosses, I think, more and more of the years are going like, hey, get out of here.
Well, and the other side of it, though, is like men are, the men are babies. Every time they get sick, they think that, you know, that they can't handle it. It's the worst thing ever.
I'm dying.
So,
tell
exactly.
my story.
But,
you know,
I think the worst cold ever. By the way, again, since we've been speaking, Major League Baseball made it announced legal or official for spring training, and they're postponing their opening day by 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
So a lot of doubleheaders this year, maybe.
Baseball should do that anyway. All those games
totally
in Boston and stuff.
They should cut like 2 weeks off the beginning of the season and 2 weeks off the end.
Yeah, well, do you want to take a 1 month haircut in your pay? Because that's what that means to the owners. I mean, that's why do they play 162 games? Why are they
thinking
about expanding
the playoff
formula?
Where's my violin
when I need it? No, but I mean,
they make way too much money as
it is. We'll tell them. They all can do whatever they want, Eric. The players don't want to take a pay cut either, right? I mean, I think that's one of the reasons the season is so long. One of the reasons that they are actually talking about putting more teams in
the playoffs. It's one of the reasons why regular people don't follow baseball anymore.
So what's the number in Illinois? 25 people infected?
Wait. Just when you say that, it's only the testing is really, really limited, John. So when you say that, it's, you know, this, that remark will not age well, but go ahead.
Okay, but again, we don't have people. We don't know. Pritzker's pushed his announcement back today till 5 rather than for 2:30. But we don't know that there are hundreds of people who have flu-like symptoms waiting to be tested either. That kind of goes back to what I'm saying. We don't.
I'm lost on your point.
Well, he's saying that people haven't been tested, and that's true. They haven't been tested, so the number's going to go up. But we anecdotally don't know of people. We don't know that there are 500 people waiting for the test results to come in.
So you guys are still in different places. You think the number's going to be lower?
He's not saying lower. He's just saying it's not going to go up. Austin and I think it's going to explode.
I think it'll go up more because of the spread of the actual disease rather than the testing of it.
Yeah, and I really don't know what I think. I really, truly don't. But I'm sort of teasing these things out because, you know, like Donald Rumsfeld, we don't know what we don't know.
Okay, but the point I'm trying to make, whatever the number is, and I'll just let me have 25 for a minute, is that 25 people don't currently have it. That is, 25 people have had it, and a lot of them have gotten over it. So should we subtract from 25 the 13 people who have had their 2 week run with the disease and they're okay, or and it was very mild and it wasn't that problematic to them? You know, you see these growing numbers, but really the totality of people is not as high as the numbers are because some people no longer have it.
It's a rolling number.
Right. Well, it is. It's sort of this cumulative thing, and you go, wow, now 25 people have it, or say it's 2,500, when really right now maybe only 10 or 100 people have it.
It's like a billion hamburgers served, but there's only 25 people in the restaurant.
Well,
this kind of happened a couple weeks ago. Do you remember there's that clip on Michael Bloomberg, and there's a New York Times editorial board person saying he spent $500 million. That's $1 million for every person.
Somebody tweeted recently that actually with the money he spent, he could have given every American $1 million.
I got it. Let's put it up on the screen. Bloomberg spent $500 million on ads. U.S. population, 327 million. Don't tell us if you're ahead of us on the math. He could have given each American $1 million and have had lunch money left over. It's an incredible way of putting it.
Oh, yes.
So that's where I'm feeling like we're at with coronavirus. So the example I like to use with this is how many days is 1 million seconds? It's around like 11, 12 days. Now, how long is 1 billion seconds? It's 32 years. That's that type of scale people don't really understand. And when we talk about like the mortality of coronavirus, people hear 2, that's basically 0. They hear like 0.5 for flu, zero. It's not basically zero. There's a big difference when something has 5 times the mortality rate of a flu spread out across a huge population.
Well, on that happy note,
it really brought the mood down.
Oh, it was never up.
I would ask the table, where do you think this is going to go? Given the way we're reacting, it's a matter of public policy, it's a matter of commercial policy, where is this going to end up? And, you know, my prediction is that in a couple of weeks, we're going to be in sort of an Italy-like situation where you're allowed to go out of your house, to go shopping, to go to the pharmacy, for medical attention, but that basically stay inside, stay away from people. Don't come to work. I don't know how you guys are going to do it in radio.
Why? Well,
can you have a T1 line in your house?
The reason we're doing this podcast today late is because we just had a meeting about that, and the major hosts and producers will be asked to come in.
Oh, nice.
But all the ancillary...
Because you're expendable.
But all the other staff that might be bringing the disease in might be asked to stay home, and we'll be asked to do telephone guests rather than studio guests. We'll keep the studios as clean and disinfected as possible, and we'll have a handful of people operating out of these studios. So that makes sense.
But you ride the train in, don't you, John?
Every day.
You going to keep doing that?
Well, yes, because I'm a guy.
Because you're a guy.
You're not going to be me now.
The virus isn't going to get you.
But literally, when I'm on the train, I had my gloves on today, my leather gloves, not my latex gloves, but I thought, okay, and I'm not touching my face, so even if I'm touching a germ, are you guys doing this? I'm like, even if I'm touching the virus now, it's over there. I could have the virus on my hand and not get sick as long as I don't touch my eyes, so I'm not going to touch my eyes. And then I take my glove off, and I wash my hands real well, and I'm trying to survive.
Yeah, you'll be all right. As long as someone sneezes on you in the train. I mean,
there's the problem.
I ride the Blue Line, and it's packed often when I do it, and I'm like really close to people. And
so if
I could infect them, they could infect me.
So if we're shutting down the NHL and the NBA, why are we not shutting down the CTA?
Because I think that's next, honestly.
That is a really good question. Well, or CPS.
The difference is the CTA is more vital. We need the CTA more than we need.
Completely. If you shut down the CTA, I don't know how half the people who were, 75-80% of the people who work down here.
What is it, 800,000 people a day will take the CTA? I mean, it's just incredible the number of people that use
that. You just had the security guy, the spokesman on. He gave you that number.
Yeah, right.
Talking about crime. So that'll be an advantage, right? There'll be no more crime on the CTA.
By the way, we had the attorney on for the guy that was the victim of that police shooting. The victim of the police shooting two Fridays ago. He is. He's got an attorney, and I don't know how easy it is to sue the police, but boy, oh boy, I think they've got a case.
You sue the city. What you do is you sue the city for not properly training them, and he will recover a significant amount of money, I predict.
I think he deserves it, and that's not a popular opinion in my audience, but I don't see how you look
at that.
Because
he resisted arrest?
He, stop resisting, they were yelling at him, and I said, why didn't he cooperate? She said, he was trying to stand up, he wasn't resisting, and when you watch the video of this man who was shot a couple Fridays ago after he got off the train with a couple of police officers, when they all did sort of stand up, he was not, they were standing there. He was wiping his eyes. And then the female officer pulls out her gun and shoots him. Shoots him right there.
That was horrible. On the other hand, I watched that video too. He looked like he was fighting. He didn't go limp, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Which is certainly what I would do in that situation.
I'm sorry, did he get hit by the bullet? He didn't, right?
Twice.
They did hit him where?
She showed me the scar. One went into his abdomen, and to pull that out, he now has a scar from his sternum to below, to like his navel. Shoom, to pull that out. And then he's got a butt that is a bullet hit him in the butt. It's still in there, and it's near his nerve, and he may have lasting permanent damage as a result of that.
No.
That bullet is still in. That is still in.
Yeah, he's going to get a lot of money.
And he probably should. And I mean,
you probably a little bit too personal a question to ask her, but does he have mental problems or something?
We asked him a lot about that. He has anxiety, and that's the reason he said he was moving from one train car to the other, which you're not supposed to. He felt an anxiety attack coming on, and he thought, I've got to get up and start walking. Instead of pacing up and down the car, he walked from one car to the next. You're not supposed to do that. The new car he walked into happens to have the police I've been asking everybody to put on the damn trains. So now there's two cops sitting there, and they're going, what are you doing here? And his words to the officers were,
The male officer is already staring him down and basically says something to the effect of, hey, you know, you're not supposed to cross the train cars. And so my client says, I know, I feel threatened.
I felt threatened. Well, he felt threatened by his ongoing anxiety, not by somebody on the train. And so the cops fold their arms and go, threatened. We aren't buying that. Threatened from what? So it's this huge communication breakdown. The next thing you know, they're wrestling on the ground when the train stops, and he gets shot nearly point blank twice.
As a taxpayer of Chicago, I think I'm just going to have to open my checkbook now.
I
give
say
my
we
contribution.
Should.
Just as a caveat, this is his attorney's version of the story, right?
Sure.
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely correct. And we put the president of the police union on, which was a separate kind of interview. but, I mean, the video is the video. He says he's seen things
in the video that we haven't seen.
Right. I want to know what it is.
What's possible? That's what the FOP president says.
Yeah. Well, remember what they said about the Laquan McDonald video before you get too curious about that.
God. Yeah, there are things we haven't seen, which is them drawing their gun and shooting, but we hear it loud as day, and the guy's got bullets in him. Yeah. So I think we're pretty sure of what happened there.
Yeah, I think he's going to get a check, and I think he should. Did you want to say anything about Rivers Casino?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for reminding me, because that's funny. We're talking about the coronavirus earlier, and the Rivers Casino opened up their book, I think it was this week, their sports book. Eddie Olczyk placed the first bet.
On the White Sox.
And the whole story was about how it was going to be up and running for March Madness. And now we're not going to have, it doesn't look like we're going to have March Madness. And so this kickoff of sports betting in Illinois, unlike the marijuana kickoff, looks like it's going to be greatly diminished.
Well, and that gets to this point about this larger point about all the things we're canceling. All those things and all the related commerce have tax consequences to them. When you have all kinds of, like, all the hotel rooms, the tax on hotel rooms in Chicago is pretty high, and it's a major source of revenue for the city. It's going to dry up. You lose this gambling revenue, it's going to dry up. This is going to be a big hit to funding that, you know, Austin is the expert on state municipal finances. But, can you imagine what this is going to do to the budgets that are already not in the greatest shape?
They're
I was on vacation and read Austin's book recently, and I really recommend that to everybody. It's a really great reference book, and it explains all the things going on. And I don't agree with every conclusion he makes, but it's a great reference book.
You'd like the city council to read it, and just or all of the citizens to go, oh, but, wow, the mayor does have too much.
But let me redirect that question back to Austin.
We could keep going on that topic
about the finances. Okay. Let's talk more about his book. No, but about, I mean, do you
the new Chicago?
What's going to happen when all this tax revenue that's built into these budgets isn't there?
You got to cut, or you got to take on debt. And we're not in a good position to take on debt because we're one notch above junk status. So the Tribune editorial board, or it was either Kristen or McQuarrie, or the editorial board had a great column about our rainy day fund. I was thinking back, because I am infected with Illinois political brain, but when Corona started happening and we started talking about these effects on the budget, I thought back to Pritzker's State of the State address, where he made it a very particular point to say, enough with the doom and gloom, these bots on social media always talking about how bad Illinois is, enough with that. You know why those things are important? Why it's important when we say that, you know, spending on everything that's not pensions or healthcare is down 30% over a decade? It's because when things like this happen and you need a little bit of flexibility, you need a rainy day fund, you need boots on the ground, government workers that have been hired because our fixed costs are at a reasonable level, you end up in a really bad spot. And that's going to happen with sales tax revenue, most likely. It's going to happen maybe with gas tax revenue. We don't know what the effects are of that yet because oil prices are down. So that means the sales tax revenue on gas is going to be a little bit lower, but people may buy more. So we don't know the effects there. Gambling, definitely down. That's tens of millions of dollars that was baked into the capital budget. You know, when people talk about, hey, our pension funds are in really bad shape. Moody says if there's a downturn, you get 6 years left of benefit payments. And people just go, oh, yeah, whatever. We're not cutting pensions. Yeah, what about now? I mean, when it becomes real, yesterday it was such an interesting shift in the mentality of everybody of like, oh, we're kind of talking about coronavirus. Oh, there's real effects here, and that's what's going to happen.
And that's what I meant by a story that moved so quickly in just a few hours yesterday that it really went from theoretical to real in a heartbeat.
Yeah, my two consecutive texts were Tom Hanks in the NBA, and I went, okay, this is... This is a different animal than even I was giving a credit for being.
And the last point there on, we'll talk about this with Eric at some point, on progressive income tax states, way higher volatility in revenue because people are moving and it's relying on a much smaller tax base. That's one of the advantages of a flat tax. That's my only point.
We'll have it. The ball will be in your court next time.
Can I just ask about gas taxes? I know gas prices are down, but isn't it a per gallon tax?
Part of it's a per gallon tax, just like you'd have like the soda tax was per volume. But right. Illinois is one of a few states where you actually pay general sales tax also on gas.
Okay, all right.
Which is a percent then, right?
Yeah.
Austin's a walking resource guide to...
That's Eric Zorn. That's Austin Berg. That's Steve Bertram.
For what it's worth.
I'm John Williams. We're produced by Elif Garris. We'll drop another... Yeah, wash your hands, everybody. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.